Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to the Extra Inch podcast, specifically season 4 of the Extra Inch, the all-new Extra Inch. More on that in future episodes, but for now, I hope you enjoyed our new intro music, with massive thanks to David Lindmer, who produced that for us and did a fantastic job. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Happy new signing day, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
Boys, we've signed a midfielder.
Good.
Not just that. We've signed one of the most sought-after midfielders in Europe.
Absolute scenes, mate.
And we've also signed a French guy called Tongai Ndombele.
Oh, God, Windy.
No? No, am I not allowed to do that one? No?
That was bad, sorry. You could do that. That was good.
That was really bad and obvious. I apologise. Firstly, are we going for... We're going for Tongai Ndombele, yeah, as a pronunciation?
Yeah.
Close enough, I
Tongi,
reckon.
Tongai.
I think most of the South Stand would call him Tongai Ndombele, but
you're right, mate.
You can go as hipster as you want, Chris. It's your show.
Maybe, yeah. So we're going for Tongai. What a signing, firstly. We've said for a while that we felt like Daniel Levy was waiting for the right time to strike. And by that, I mean he was waiting until we had the matchday revenue in place. He was waiting until the wage structure wasn't just broken in a kind of inorganic way. He was growing the club, growing the revenue to a point where he could up the wage structure at Spurs. And I think it's fair to say that that has now happened with the new stadium and boom, the wage structure's gone. Harry Kane's on, what, 200k a week? And I'm guessing Ndombele is going to be on something similar because he is a superstar. He's a superstar of signing. Do you think, Nathan, that this is the start of a series of signings or is this just our one big one for the summer?
It's really hard to tell because either would make a lot of sense. It could be that we've, you know, splashed our entire budget on a single player because that was a necessity. Or this could be the beginning of a new era where, you know, this is our approach to signings because our revenues dramatically increased because we're an elite side who play in the Champions League final, who have an incredible manager that is worth backing and improves players. Either reality kind of makes sense and it's hard to sort of predict and guess. But definitely the club have been saying, and the club have been defending their lack of inactivity by saying we're waiting for the right player. We don't want to, you know, just buy a player to fill a gap now. You know, if we'd have bought, I don't know, Lamina last summer, yes, that would have been, we would probably have had a better season and he's a good player and he'd filled in and done well there. But we then wouldn't have had the funds or the space in our squads to buy a truly elite midfielder in Ndombele. So when I got into Qatar, and this is something that all guitarists go through, they realize how expensive everything is, right? And you do this thing where you buy the sort of the cheaper third rate guitar, the cheaper third rate pedal, the cheaper third rate amp, and then you realize that actually if you're going to gig, you've got to buy it again and buy it again. You keep doing this thing and you realize that the sensible cheap thing to do is actually to splash out and not keep buying things three times over. I think that's the same for players.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And the problem we've had in the past, and to some extent we've still got, is not only do you have to rebuy the better player, you then have to sell the old player who wasn't up to the mark. And we're having problems there. Buddy, how about you? Do you feel like this is the start of many signings, or is this a one-off? Have we dropped 60 million for the first and last time?
No, I don't think this is our last signing. It's you know, it gets banded around that it's a statement, it's a marquee signing. And I think this is because we've addressed a serious weakness in the team, and I fully expect us to go on and address other areas, left back, right back. And I can see movement happening there. But the amazing thing is it's like an incredible signing. It's like one of the best prospects in world football, and he's come to Tottenham, and we just dropped £62 million on it, and that's just insane. Just to think, £62 million on a player. I'm struggling to get my head around it. It feels as good as when we signed Soldado and Paulinho and all them lot.
Don't say that.
It's kind of mad when you think about the prices. Like, when you see prices and it's other clubs spending that money, it doesn't somehow feel real, and you almost sort of, it feels frivolous and you sort of want to laugh it off. But when it's your own club spending that money, you almost feel like it's your own money being spent.
But
and you sort of feel protective of those funds. But with a player as good as him, I do not care. I would have been happy to spend whatever to get this guy because he's just what the doctor ordered.
But the mad thing is, this almost can be seen as an investment because he's 22 years old. So in four years' time, we could be talking about someone on the same level as Pogba. And then you're looking, if it does come to it, if Real Madrid, Barcelona do come looking, then you're looking at £120-130 million for this player. So it's a great bit of business. And, you know, you've got to give respect to the people behind it.
Yep, and I think we'll probably see some money being recouped. We've got some players who are likely to leave, and so the net spend ultimately might not be as much as we might expect, but I can see us spending a fair bit more money this window. You know, we're certainly being linked with plenty more players. Lo Celso, as we've mentioned before, has been strongly linked. Ceballos has been linked also this past week, although it's potentially a loan move. And then also the Sessegnon twins are still being strongly linked as well. So there's other money sort of being ready to spend, I understand.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the loan deal. I don't think Pochettino kind of likes a loan. I think the way he invests in players and the way he trains them, I don't think he sees much value in. Perhaps this is why we never went for Tielemans. He doesn't see much value in loaning a player, improving them, and then having to give them back. So I don't put much credence into that link.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Tongai. Nathan, I'll start with you. Tell us everything you know about Ndombele.
Everything. Mm. The first thing is that he's really, really good. and it's absurd to me that other clubs have allowed us to this to happen, because, you know, there are plenty of clubs with a lot more money than us who could have very much benefited from this player, but we are the ones who've got him. And it probably helps that Frankie de Jong and Rabiot and Rodri have also sort of moved around this kind of period of time, that sort of shake up in the market, but all the same. The comparison that is mostly made is to the hole in our squad, which is left by Moussa Dembélé. And yes, his name is kind of similar, but they do have some stylistic similarities. Receiving the ball under pressure, turning with the ball, beating their man, and moving forward into space. You know, that's sort of a big similarity there. But Tanguy is like much more creative, much more aggressive with his passing. He's got a lovely long through ball on him. He loves a vertical pass as well. And yeah, he's fitter, younger. If you were to try to find a weakness for him, and I wouldn't, but if you were to try to, you might say he's not 100% defensively. But I don't want that to be misconstrued. That's a difficult thing to sort of say, because he's not weak defensively. I'm not saying he's poor defensively. I'm saying that his other skill sets are elite, and also he's quite good defensively. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, I'm with you. Bardi, build on that. Give us some numbers. Tell us how he compares with others.
Yeah, I think what Nathan was saying was interesting. He's almost like a box-to-box playmaker that he can get up and down, and he's not going to sit. His dribbling success rate is pretty close to Dembele's. Dembele is 84%. Ndombele is 82%. I'm dropping stats, man. I'm starting to feel really, starting to feel really uncomfortable.
I love it. Keep going.
He won 66 tackles in Ligue 1 last season, which is a lot. It's more than any of our midfielders tried. And I don't know. He just ticks all the boxes, man. He's more creative. He creates more goals. He does everything. He's amazing.
And I think it's fair to say that he's not going to be completely polished and he's not going to be completely perfect. But this is a guy who's played over 5,000 minutes in Ligue 1. He's someone who is certainly ready for the next step. And what better manager to oversee that than Pochettino? And I think also what's really helpful for him is he's coming into a team structure where it doesn't matter necessarily if he's not immaculate straight away, because we know that we can kind of get by with Winks and Sissoko. And so if he does take some time to bed in, which actually I don't think he necessarily will, it's not the end of the world because we've got cover there. I personally think we're sort of leading towards Sissoko coming out of the team. I see Ndombele as kind of like Sissoko, but better. Is that fair to say? Stylistically, they're similar. They both like to break forward. They both like to run with the ball. They both like to commit players. But Ndombele is much more polished with his passing, as Nathan's already said. One other weakness, Nathan, I would add, is that he doesn't score many goals at this point. But again, that's something that can come later. So he only scored one goal in Ligue 1, I believe.
I'm not sure I would use the phrase weakness to describe a lack of goals. Mm. I don't think that, like, if a fullback only scores a goal a season, we don't call that a weakness. Or if a centre-back, okay, maybe they should score headers, but we don't call that a weakness. I the idea that central midfielders all of them should be scoring goals is a misnomer for me. Sorry to push back on that.
Because
Dembele was subjected to the same thing, and there was this narrative around him, he's so brilliant, why doesn't he score goals? And I was always frustrated by that conversation. I don't want to go through that again.
And Modric before him too, but I would say that there are probable differences in the expectations of the roles, whereas Dembele played in a pivot. He played in a double pivot. He generally played just in front of the back four, whereas Ndombele, I think, is going to be the breaker for midfield. So he's going to be expected to be driving the play forward and controlling possession. He'll be receiving it from Winks and progressing us up the field, and then from what we've seen of him at his previous club, finding the right back. That's a lot of his game, is he'll find the right back, and we'll come on to right backs later, because I think there is an issue there. But then getting into the box as well and making himself an option, and if he can add that to his game, if he can add goals to his game, that will be a really helpful thing. And if we are transitioning to 4-3-3, which I think this signing looks like we are, then you probably do need some goals from at least one of your three central midfielders.
Fair enough.
Let's talk a little about how this changes things. I've just mentioned right back there because I think it's important. I think the right back position becomes even more important to strengthen. Now we've got a player like Ndombele who will progress the ball into that kind of right channel. You then need someone to pick up the slack and do some good stuff with the ball once he's done his part. And you know, judging on last season at least, and the season before the previous season, Trippier might not be that man, unless Pochettino thinks he can turn Trippier back round into the player he was the season before last. So I think right back now becomes number two priority in terms of our summer business. What other things do you think are essential this summer, Nathan?
Essential is hard. We have addressed the most essential thing. I think that if either of Alderweireld or Eriksen were to leave, they would become essential, but they're not until they do. Right back is you could say that's borderline essential. And I do also think that we want a defensive midfielder. We want a Wanyama who's not broken kind of player.
Interesting. So what are you going to do there? How are you going to... Are you saying then that Winks would not be the deepest lying of the midfield three, and you'd have a natural sort of ball-winning holder there, and then Winks off to the left?
Yeah, so I think that if we go with this idea of moving to a three-man midfield, you have your fixed Wanyama, you have Ndombele playing as sort of the more defensive number eight, and you have a more attacking number eight who could be Eriksen if he stays, or could be Lo Celso or Fernandes or whoever else we might bring in for Eriksen. And Winks is plays back up to all three roles because that's his versatility, is that, and he will pick up plenty of game time without shouldering so much of the burden by being this sort of fourth midfielder off the bench.
Okay, that's fair. I it's hard to disagree with that. I in my head, I'm seeing Poch putting full faith in Winks as the deepest lying midfield player.
Sure.
Because I think he can do, I think he's kind of shown that he's got the intelligence to play that role. And I think the signing of Ndombele means the way we play has changed somewhat. And we will, in my opinion, have more control of the ball. Whereas where we were with Winks and Sissoko last year, we were often chasing the ball. We didn't have as much of it as previous seasons, and we didn't win it as early as previous seasons, and we didn't spring teams as early as previous seasons. And I think we can kind of go back to some of those early Pochettino traits where we're winning the ball back quickly and then we're hitting teams where it hurts early and quickly, and we're having probably a lot more of the ball, and that suits Winks' game. So I like him as the deepest line midfield player for next year. And like you say, signing a number eight to replace Eriksen then becomes vital if Eriksen is to go. I mean, if Eriksen stays, then wow, it's almost like,
yeah, man,
it becomes, dare I say, a title challenging midfield. I mean,
you do dare say that.
I do. I really, like today, I really feel like saying that. That's how good this signing's made me feel. Like, I'm properly excited for the first time in a long time about this signing. I think it's incredibly exciting. So, Bardi, for you, what are the priorities now? I mean, it seems sort of churlish to start talking about the next signing because we've already had two, and we'll come on to the second shortly. But who's the one you really want now, Bardi?
I think the right back situation might even be settled this summer by Foyf playing in Copa America, because tonight is the semi-final and he looks likely to start a right back again. And perhaps, I mean, I still don't believe he's a Pochettino right back, but perhaps we've got something within the squad there that will fill that gap. But it was interesting listening to you guys chat about Winks, and I kind of agree with Nathan more than you, Windy, about Winks will become a kind of the rotation option between the three in midfield. But then I also do think if the right player doesn't come available, I'll be more than happy to see Winks play as the deepest liner, with then perhaps Dier or Wanyama filling in when needed. So I'm quite comfortable in both situations. I think for us it's more important to get a right back, sort out the Alderweireld situation. If he goes, we're going to need a replacement, and sort out Eriksen as well. I'm not sure where the future lies for Eriksen. I don't see clubs opening up for him. PSG, I don't think there's space there now. I'm not sure about Real Madrid. I don't think there's space at Barcelona. I wouldn't be surprised if Eriksen sits down and signs a new contract in the next couple of weeks.
I would absolutely love for that to happen. Yeah. I would love that to happen. I mean, the talk today is that Real now turn their attentions to Eriksen and make him a priority. Who knows? Who knows what's going
to
happen?
But, for Real Madrid to do that, they're going to have to start shifting somebody, because now they're collecting centre midfielders. They've got to shift James. They've got to make a decision on Cruz, Modric, all these guys. They're, you know, even though financial fair play, maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't, they can't go into the season with like 10 Galacticos in centre midfield.
Is that not Ceballos though? Like, offloading Ceballos, are they not creating space for Eriksen?
I think, to be honest with you, they've probably got to offload a bigger earner or a bit more money than Ceballos.
Fair
and
enough.
A space in the first 11.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Ceballos doesn't open up a gap for Eriksen.
Fair enough. We're going to move on to talk about our other signing today, which is, you know, in many ways, almost as exciting, because it was our first one. Our first signing for like 516 days, something mad like that. And it was Jack Clarke, who is the 18-year-old attacking midfielder from Leeds, a young English talent, who really hasn't played that many minutes, but has certainly caught the eye when he has. He caught my eye a couple of times last year. And we spoke about him in the last podcast. Nathan, you saw him in the flesh. And Nathan's just been talking to a notable Leeds fan and Extra Inch alumni, John McKenzie, about his thoughts on Jack Clarke. So you're going to hear that now.
Hello, everyone. It's Nathan. I'm here to have a quick chat about our new signing, our first signing in over 500 days, Jack Clark, with John McKenzie. John has been on before, and you should definitely go back and listen to that episode. But just as a reminder, he is, first and foremost, a good friend of mine. He is a freelance football journalist with some focus on the political and the philosophical. But most importantly for us, he is a Leeds fan, or he is currently, until they get bought out by the Qatari Empire. John is also currently writing a book about Marcelo Bielsa. Hello, John. How are you, mate?
Hello, Nathan. I'm good, thanks.
Awesome. So, yes, our first transfer in 18 months, and it's a loan straight back. this was sort of... And I'm going to do the bad hosting thing where I give my opinion up front and then go to you. So apologies for that one. But this was sort of confusing to me at first. I didn't really get this, especially, and that's not true anymore because there's been another signing, but this idea that we were first and foremost going after sort of a winger and a young winger who probably wasn't Premier League ready. It was sort of, why is this such a rush? But with the loan back, that sort of makes sense. I think this is sort of an opportunistic buy where it's like, there's a young talent available. We do need English players eventually. We'll sort of sign up their future now, but we'll allow them to develop in the situation they're currently in and currently thriving in. So firstly, how do you and how do other Leeds fans feel about this deal and the loan back? Is there sort of a sense of like being used in that regard?
I don't think so. I think I know we're going to go on to talk about this, but a lot of this Jack Clark business has been viewed by the fan base in the light of the fact that he had he picked up a virus in February and was out for about a month and a half, and it was a very serious virus. He basically collapsed on the bench against Middlesbrough. No one knew what was going on, and was all up in the air. So it's clearly, when you hear the word virus, you sort of think, well, it doesn't sound too bad, but it kept him out for 6 weeks. When he came back, he was a shadow of the player that he'd been before. I know that you saw him with me at Brentford.
Yes.
And he had a really poor game that day. Wasn't particularly representative of how he'd been before that.
I'm glad to hear that.
But I think that the Leeds fans have a very short-term memory about these sorts of things. So I think had we got to the end of the season and that virus had never happened and he'd carried on playing the way that he'd played before that, then I think there would be a lot more of a furore about this. But I think Leeds fans kind of feel, we're not entirely sure how good he's going to be given how he was at the end of the season, but he was someone who thrived under Bielsa and we're happy to have him on board. We're bringing in a few other players as well, so we've got a bit more rotation in that area as well. So I think the Leeds fans have generally been quite happy, especially with the fact that this is a fairly decent sum of money. There's quite a few add-ons as well, and like you say, we get the loan back. So I think the Leeds fans are actually fairly pleased with it, because it could have been someone like Calvin Phillips, who I think would have been much more upsetting to the whole system.
I like Phillips. I don't think he would step up to Spurs especially well, but I do really enjoy watching him play. I enjoyed him on that Brentford game. Anyway, that you brought up a couple of points there that I do want to revisit, but let's just talk about him generally. Can you describe him as a player for us?
Yeah, so he's a very classic wide player for us. We play in a system that I guess a lot of Spurs fans would be familiar with, the sort of football that we're playing, given that you have the Bielsa Pochettino crossover. And I guess that's another reason why Spurs fans should feel positive about this, because essentially you're buying in a player fairly decent value, but you're also giving him back to Bielsa to develop for another season. So that should be a good thing all round. But the way that we've been playing is we play in a 4-1-4-1, which is very fluid, and it sort of works around this system that Bielsa has, where there's one of the central midfielders drops in a little bit closer to the centre backs, the wing backs. Well, full backs push right up. It's positional play, so we're looking at gaining superiorities in various areas. We're looking at overloading in wide areas in order to isolate on the far side. And Jack Clark fit in very well in that system, where he's expected to get into one-on-ones in wide areas and then feed the ball across to other players. And he was actually probably quite, he was quite missed towards the end of the season, I think, because teams started sitting back against us. And we relied heavily on Pablo Hernandez, who played as almost like an inside forward in the wide area rather than an out-and-out winger, which meant that we were relying on the other winger to do a lot of the creative work in terms of classic wing play. And that tended to be Jack Harrison, who wasn't always up to the task. And we missed having Jack Harris, Jack Clark in those scenarios where he can actually genuinely get into one-on-one scenarios and beat a player and then hit bylines, or even just go around them and cut back inside and then curl in a shot. We actually missed a bit of that guile, I think, at the end of the season when teams were sitting deep against us and we just didn't have anyone who was really very good at dribbling. So I'd say Clark is first and foremost a very good ball carrier. And in a very deceptive way, I think he's not, it's not like watching someone who's, I guess, more of a classic dribbler. So someone like, I guess Spurs fans would be used to, Son and Moura being good on the ball. But Clark is one of those players who just, he just seems to move the ball really well. He understands how to manipulate space in one-on-one scenarios. So that's what you'd be looking for. When he came back in the second part of the season after his virus, he was expected to do things a little bit differently, and it didn't work out quite so well as well. So I'd say that Leeds were taking more shots from outside the box and I guess panicking a bit as well. So it would be unfair to judge anything of that. But yeah, you're looking at a classic winger, good on the ball, good pacey, gets down to bylines, hits it bylines and pulls the ball back. So I'm sure that will fit in well with the Spurs system.
Yeah, there's definitely, because you talked about the obviously the Bielsa Pochettino link there's definitely sort of a sense of sort of excitement, I feel, between these two old friends to sort of combine together professionally on a project together, that kind of thing. But yeah, so Jack, he's very right-footed, is that correct?
Yeah.
But he plays on both the right and left sides. So he can play as an outside winger on the right, putting crosses in, or if he plays on the left, he'll cut inside and be sort of more varied in his attacking.
Yeah, it all depended on who he came on for for Leeds. So if he came on for someone like Pablo Hernandez, the expectation was that he would cut inside more and Jack Harrison would be the wide player. And so they would bring Harrison across to the right and Clark would then play on the left with the ability to then cut inside on his right foot and get shots away.
So yeah, it's interesting. So he had 24 league appearances last season, and 20 of those were off the bench.
Yep.
Is that because he wasn't good enough to break the first team, or is that about a sort of an intelligent use of him tactically because he could be adaptive and you could change your team, or is there a potential fitness issue in there?
Yeah, it's funny you should say the fitness issue. Because I mean, he wasn't really brought in until about six or seven games in. He'd been working with the under 23s and then was brought in and played as a sub, basically as an impact sub, really. And that was what we were saying before. You know, the ability at the end of games to just run at fullbacks and take them on. So he was played like that. And in fact, he only ever played 90 minutes on one occasion. So the majority of the time, he was being brought on as an impact sub. He was also being played in the under 23s at times as well. So there were scenarios where he would be playing for the under 23s and then a couple of days later playing for the full team. So there were some games that he did come on and he looked like he had fitness issues, but then he'd played 60 or 70 minutes a couple of days before as well. So I think the issues with him not getting full game time was more to do with the fact that Bielsa felt more keen to play Harrison ahead of him, and then he would bring on Clark to replace whoever he felt wasn't getting the most out of the game, be it Hernandez or Harrison. So
okay, well let's address the elephant in the room. Let's talk about that virus. So he was lighting things up beforehand, went away ill for a while, and when he came back, he wasn't performing well, and the team as a whole weren't performing well. So maybe that sort of didn't help him recovery. But is there sort of a concern that he's, you know, taken some kind of permanent damage there, or are you more optimistic than that?
Yeah, so he got injured on the 9th of February against Middlesbrough. And I'm just looking at it now. He didn't come back until the 16th of March. So he's out for six games there. And then after that, he doesn't play more than... Well, he plays 29 minutes in the final league game against Ipswich. That's the most he plays. Everything else is sort of 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 13 minutes. So he didn't really have a huge amount of chance to come back. He also was out for a game as well and was on the bench for another game, didn't come on. So he wasn't really given a fair show. He was on the bench against Villa as well. So it's not the case. I don't think that, you know, he came back and was just disappointing. He was never really given the chance to do anything other than just come on as a sub. And in most of those games, you know, we're chasing games or we were already down. So his first game back was, he got 30 minutes at the end against Sheffield United. We were already 1-0 down at that point. And I think there's a lot of pressure on him because he had been an impact sub to produce something. And you know how it is when you're thrown on in those scenarios, the expectation is on you to do something. And often trying very hard is not the best way to achieve any of these things. So I suspect that, given the scenario, a summer off, all of this transfer speculation that had been around for a while anyway. I mean, there was transfer speculation around in January window as well. So now that this is all sorted out, he can now come back to Leeds and just get his head down and work and have a full summer and have recuperated after his virus. I suspect he'll come back and be good again. So I'm not too worried about him not picking up from where he left off.
Awesome. So Pochettino is sort of notoriously reluctant to send players on loan because he wants them to be coached the right way in his way. Yeah. And obviously, you know, Bielsa is a situation where he's getting that. Another concern is, of course, game time. There's no point sending a player out if he's not going to play. So with Leeds being linked to two other wingers quite strongly, is that correct? Is there any fear about game time dropping off? Is there going to be more rotation?
Yeah, I think he'll be getting plenty of game time, if I'm honest. We're linked with Helder Costa from Wolves, and then they're bringing Jack Harrison back. And then we've got, I guess, Pablo plays as a winger, roughly, or as like an inside forward as one of those two. So for me, the question is whether or not Pablo is played in that position again, whether or not the team decides that actually he might be okay playing as a 10, because we're pretty thin on the ground in the central area. So I don't know whether or not Bielsa played Pablo wide because he felt as though that was his best position, or whether or not he felt it was better playing him there because he didn't have options elsewhere. So if he's got a classic wide player like Helder Costa, he'll probably start in that area, and then I think they'll probably rotate Clark and Harrison in the other wide area. So it all comes down to whether or not Hernandez plays in the 10 role or not, how they fit Hernandez in the team. But I suspect because Bielsa had made a big point about getting double coverage in every position as part of our transfer project this summer, I think that means that he's definitely going to have time, and I think he'll probably rotate with Harrison, similar to the way that he did in the season.
All right, brilliant. I could bug you with some other questions, some sort of more outside questions, but I know that there is an England women's game on in a few minutes that you want to catch, so I will let you go. You are John_McKenzie with an That's A right. in Mac on Twitter. Have you got anything else to plug while you're here?
No, not really. I have a newsletter that some people enjoy, so maybe you will, but that's on my Twitter as well, so you can go over there, and that just kind of recounts what's going on with the writing of the book on Marcelo Bielsa as well, so everything's over there.
I certainly enjoy your newsletter. Thank you very much for coming on, mate.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Thank you very much, John, for your expert thoughts on Jack Clark, and well done, Nathan, for hosting that section. Bardi, have you got any thoughts on Jack Clark?
Yeah, he looks like a good lad. Someone that would you'd bump into around the chippy. He looks like a good lad. Never seen him play
before. He's got a very, what I would say, a young man's haircut.
Yeah,
he's the kind of haircut that my mum would say is a bit rough.
Yeah, if I saw him lurking around my car, I would kind of stop and wait for him to move. He's got those kind of faces.
Bit of a scally. Kind of
no, yeah, you're making him out to be rougher than he is. I think he has like Snapchat hair. I think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah. You're spot on with that. Yeah, Snapchat hair is a lovely description. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I mean, you can hear our thoughts on Jack Clark from the previous episode, and obviously John knows a lot more about him than we do, so hopefully you enjoyed his thoughts as well. Right, we're going to leave it there, but we'll be back when we sign more players. More players! We want more players, Daniel Levy. We're not done just yet. Hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back soon.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud elindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.